From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. has welcomed the decision by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons to investigate Saturday's suspected chemical weapons attack on the rebel-held Syrian town of Douma. But U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert said there are other ways to determine what agent was used and who was responsible.
The United States government has its own mechanisms to be able to look into things. Some of these would be intelligence matters that I'm not going to get into. You know full well why. The United States has been sharing information with its allies and partners, as have our allies been sharing information with us. But the OPCW, we recognize and are pleased to see that they are able to get to the area or eventually be able to get to the area, we hope, as soon as possible.
She said the list of those likely responsible is limited.
We know that only certain players, to use your word, have access to these kinds of chemical weapons. We know that it requires certain kinds of delivery mechanisms to use those types of weapons.
At the UN, Russia and the U.S. blocked each other's efforts to investigate the attack. Russia's ambassador, Vasily Nebenzia, accused the U.S. of taking another step toward confrontation. His American counterpart, Nikki Haley, castigated Moscow for protecting what she called a monster, a reference to Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. The United States has lifted a travel ban on citizens coming from Chad after a six-month review that resulted in improved security standards. The African country had been placed on a revised travel ban last September after Chadian officials failed to provide evidence of adequate security measures to prevent terrorists from traveling to the U.S. The list now includes seven countries, including Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, North Korea, and Venezuela. This is VOA News. The White House said President Trump will not travel to Peru for the 8th Summit of the Americas, which gets underway Friday to oversee the U.S. response to the Syrian chemical attack. He will be represented by Vice President Mike Pence. Peter Hockham, President Emeritus and Senior Fellow at the Inter-American Dialogue, said Mr. Trump was viewed as a central figure if he had taken part.
I mean, the tension would be very high in any kind of serious discussion, presuming there were serious discussions at the summit. So it's a combination, like I say, of disappointment and relief for some.
The cancellation is the first for a U.S. leader. Presidents have attended each summit since 1994. Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg repeated apologies for recent security breaches on the giant social media platform in the first of 2 days of testimony before congressional committees. He mentioned fake news, foreign interference in elections, hate speech, and data privacy, acknowledging more needs to be done to protect its hundreds of millions of users.
It's not enough to just connect people. We have to make sure that those connections are positive. It's not enough to just give people a voice. We need to make sure that people aren't using it to harm other people or to spread misinformation.
Facebook was shaken by revelations that tens of millions of its users' personal information was accessed by the UK-based political consultancy Cambridge Analytica. Last year, it acknowledged Russians using fake names used Facebook to try to influence the 2016 U.S. election. A year after criticizing Qatar for funding terrorism at a high level, President Donald Trump welcomed the emir to the White House, calling him a friend. Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani insisted that gas-rich Qatar, which hosts a U.S. airbase, does not fund terrorism.
We do not and we will not tolerate with people who fund terrorism. We've been cooperating with the United States of America to stop funding terrorism around the region. We do not tolerate with people who support and fund terrorism.
Qatar has denied allegations by its Gulf neighbors, including Saudi Arabia, of spreading extremism, fomenting regional unrest, and allowing funds to flow to terror groups. In South Sudan, the UN said at least one aid worker was killed after gunmen shot an agency vehicle marked as operated by the Catholic Organization for Relief and Development Aid. The attack occurred near the town of Bentiu in Unity State. In Myanmar, also known as Burma, a court rejected a motion to drop a case against two Reuters journalists arrested while investigating allegations of a massacre of Rohingya Muslims. In detention since December, they're accused of violating the country's official Secrets Act. Panama said it will ban several Venezuelan airlines from operating in the country for at least 90 days in response to allegations of corruption. Last month, Panama put more than 50 Venezuelans, including President Nicolas Maduro, on a high-risk list, suspecting them of money laundering and financing terrorism. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Protests resume today in Togo as political dialogue appears to have stalled.
The dialogue is blocked up, and the opposition political parties decided to resume with their demonstrations. So they will start tomorrow and also the day after tomorrow, and they will end up on Saturday.
Kodjo de Lavia is a member of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. The UN Refugee Agency seeks a framework for dialogue between Rwanda and Burundi on repatriation of Burundian refugees. A Zimbabwe parliamentary committee wants former President Mugabe to testify on the management of the country's diamond industry. And Sierra Leone's new president decrees new civil service work regulations.
The president has been a man of his word, and he realized that the interest of us actually moving this nation forward, we must be serious about our time management. Development is about how you manage your time well.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. Thousands of Libyans being held unlawfully by armed groups are deprived of their liberty, and improving the physical fitness of women, farmers in the DRC. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says it will resume demonstrations beginning today, Wednesday, until this Saturday, calling President Faure Gnassingbé to step down. This despite ongoing talks being brokered by Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo. But Kodjo de Lavia, Secretary General of the main opposition National Alliance for Change Party, says the talks have stalled due to the intransigence of President Gnassingbé. The protesters are demanding a return to Togo's 1992 constitution, which established a two-term limit for the presidency. But President Gnassingbé, in power since 2005, is proposing a referendum to change the constitution to a 2 5-year term of office retroactively. Kodjo de Lavia says the protests are resuming because the government has violated the guidelines of the dialogue.
The dialogue is blocked up. And the opposition political parties decided to resume with their demonstrations. So they will start tomorrow and also the day after tomorrow, and they will end up on Saturday.
What do you mean the dialogue blocked off? Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo was mediating. What is the problem?
Yeah, he's doing his best so far, and every single Togolese recognize the efforts President Nana Akufo-Addo is doing to come up with a sound solution. But a dictatorship is something not that easy to deal with. That is the reason why the dialogue is blocked up in the meantime. The government is going on the electoral process, although it was said that while the dialogue is on, the government should stop preparing unilaterally the next elections.
I know the sticky point has been that of the two-term limit, which the opposition is demanding retroactively, and President Gnassingbé wanting to have a referendum. What is the point of disagreement between you and the government?
I think the main point is the will of this regime to stay on power eternally. In fact, you did say retroactively. There is any retroactive situation there, because once we go back to the Constitution of 1992, it's applied immediately and entirely. If we go back to the 1992 Constitution, this Constitution say nobody can step for the candidatureship, or nobody can rule the country for more than 2 terms. This guy had the power, already run the country for 3 terms. Now he wants to run the country again for an additional term, which will be 4 terms. And this is obviously unacceptable, and the Togolese people don't want that.
Mr. Okojo, in the meantime, there was a medical doctors' strike. I think that is now over. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have just been to Togo or completed a mission to Togo. Economically, how do you think the country is doing in the face of all these protests and the political uncertainty?
Of course, the country's economy is in a bad shape, and the demonstration increased this situation. The economy, due to corruption and mismanagement, was already in a bad shape. And now, if you add the impact of the demonstration, things are worse.
Kojo de Lavia is the Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Sierra Leone's new president, Julius Maada Bio, has announced new guidelines for the country's public sector workers. Under the new regulations, the work schedule for all government employees, including cabinet ministers, will be from 8:30 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. President Maada Bio has vowed to make unannounced visits to the different ministries and agencies. The president also reintroduced trading and commercial activities on Sundays, beginning this Sunday, April 15th. He has also decreed a national cleaning day to take place the first Saturday of every month. Lahai Lawrence Lima, National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, says President Maada Bio believes that if Sierra Leone is to develop, it must manage its time efficiently.
The president has been a man of his word. People voted him because he is a credible person. When he says this, I'll do it, he'll do it. And he realized that the interest of us actually moving this nation forward, we must be serious about our time management. Development is about how you manage your time well. And that is why he's actually been very strict about the timings people report for work and how much o'clock they break up for work, so that we can give in our best to the job we are being paid for.
I'm from Liberia, just across the river from your country. And we have something in Liberia called the Liberian Standard Time. And I'm sure you also have the Sierra Leone Standard Time. Time is very important, but for some reason, it seems to me people don't seem to understand the need to be on time.
Yes, that is a little fear. I think a lot of people have been putting towards work over the period, which has actually made development programs stifle in this country. When you save time, it saves money, it saves cost, it saves development. But if you actually become very lazy about your time management, then development program itself will be undermined.
I do remember the president of Tanzania, John Magufuli, when he took over newly, he introduced something like this. What is President Maada Bio going to do to make sure that this issue of public sector employees reporting to work on time is enforced?
The very reason before he actually comes up with those implementations and strategy, he had meetings with civil servants, with the security sector, and with those that actually matter in society, for the matter in the progress of society. He had meeting with them and actually sharing his own time and principles with them. And so implementation is key for his second term in office, and that is why he has actually started implementing his project. He is somebody who is very key and actually who is here to work. So he's not going to just start it after some time he relaxed on it. That is even the reason why he's taking it further to say he will do unannounced checks to certain MDAs and ministries and departments as well without any announcement.
So Lima, talk to me about the reintroduction of Sunday trading and commercial activities effective this Sunday, April 15.
Before this time, Sierra Leoneans actually have been trading on Sunday. It was during the Ebola period that the outgoing government decided to suspend trading on Sunday. Sierra Leone is a stranded economy and of which people actually survive on a daily basis. And so if you suspend daily trading, the average income earner will find it very difficult for survival. And this Sunday trading that has been suspended over the period is one that many Sierra Leoneans, especially the low-income earner, were never happy about, as a result of the fact that making income has been difficult for them. So reintroducing Sunday trading will also help low-income earners to be able to make their daily earnings.
The president has also declared a national cleaning day on the first Saturday of each month.
Reintroducing or coming back with the National Cleaning Day is also good for health reasons, because if you have a healthy population, it helps also help the economy of the country, because once the population is healthy, then they will engage in healthy activities and then the country will move forward.
Lahai Lawrence-Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the now-ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today is Wednesday, April 11th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. The UN Refugee Agency is set to establish a framework for dialogue between Rwanda and Burundi on the repatriation of Burundian refugees from Rwanda. This comes after Burundi accused Rwanda of holding Burundian refugees hostage. Moses Habyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
During his visit in Bujumbura, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Chief Filippo Grandi, met Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza to discuss on issues related to the refugees. Mr. Grandi said that UN Refugee Agency is already supporting the Burundian refugees who voluntarily expressed their will to repatriate.
We will work to establish a better framework for discussion between Rwanda, Burundi and UNHCR on the refugees there. It's important. I spoke to President Kagame yesterday about the same, and I'm confident that we will go towards a more constructive engagement.
Last week, Burundi government accused Rwanda of holding Burundian refugees hostage and militarily trained them to oust President Pierre Nkurunziza's government. The allegations which Rwanda have denied, the UNHCR chief Filippo Grandi urged the international communities to support not only the refugees but also the host countries.
We then spoke about the Burundian refugees in neighboring countries. I assure the president that we are in the process of verifying the figures. This is something that we do routinely, especially in a dynamic situation like this. I told the president that we will continue to support those that want voluntarily to return to this country, and some want, especially from Tanzania. So we'll continue to do that. The situation with Rwanda is a bit more complicated.
Last month, 33 of the Burundian refugees were arrested by the Rwandan authority, accused of inciting fellow refugees to reject assistance from the UNHCR. In a statement from the Rwandan Foreign Affairs Ministry, a number of refugees showed up unusual attitudes and refused to provide biometrics data or comply with the public health requirements. Diomede Nzeyimana is President Pierre Nkurunziza's spokesman. He says Burundi continued to host many refugees despite having gone through hard times. He says that Burundi currently hosts 73,000 refugees from Democratic Republic of Congo. He called on the refugee agency chief to make sure refugee camps in Rwanda are not turned into military camps. Burundi and Rwanda relations deteriorated since 2015 when incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office. Rwanda accused Burundi of hosting the FDLR rebel, who are said to have committed the 1994 genocide. Burundi also accuses Rwanda of sheltering the May 2015 coup plotters and militarily training refugees in efforts to oust the current government. However, the visit by the UN chief could bring some hope of easing the tension between the two neighboring countries. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A Zimbabwe parliamentary committee says it wants former President Robert Mugabe to testify before the committee about the management of the country's diamond mining industry. In 2016, the then President Mugabe claimed that Zimbabwe lost $15 billion in income from diamonds due to corruption. A number of high-ranking government officials have already been summoned by the Parliamentary Committee on Mines and Energy over the allegedly missing $15 billion in revenue. Tamba Umliswa is chair of the Parliamentary Committee on Mines and Energy. He says summoning the former president and other senior former and present government officials does not mean they were guilty of embezzling the diamond funds.
So before you question them, there's got to be an inquiry to see whether the system was actually seen wanting in terms of the $15 billion going missing. And this is done by calling all institutions responsible for the diamond mining in Zimbabwe, where the government was involved, the ministers involved, where the treasury is involved, where the minister of finance is involved, where ZIMRA, which is responsible responsible for taxation is involved, where the joint venture partners who are working with the government are involved, whether they were declaring their assets and revenue, whether the Minerals Board of Control Unit, which so pretends the security of the minerals in the country through the Zimbabwe Republic Police, was also functional. These are all different departments which are there to ensure that diamonds are mined in a proper way and they're safeguarded from being smuggled or underhand dealing. So the former president then said there was $15 billion missing. So you don't start by asking him. You first of all do an inquiry, then you get to him.
The fact that you would like the president to testify or come before your committee, this is not an allegation against the president that maybe there was some money misused.
Yes, definitely. It touches on a lot, the undervaluation of diamonds too, the smuggling of diamonds and the misappropriation of funds. But the recommendations will clearly articulate how it went missing, through which ways in the various sectors. So we are not just about speculation. Even the former Vice President Joyce Mujuru was said to be owning a concession there. And I got this from a radio interview. So it's also important for us to call her before us to ask her, was she ever involved in diamond dealing? And at the time she was vice president, what was the policy in terms of diamond mining and the production?
Let's assume he does not want to come before your committee. Can you force him to come?
Yes, the parliament has got a lot of powers. We can summon him to come. And that, to me, is pretty clear. But he's a man who's educated, and it's unfair for people to say that he's too old when already he could have been the president up to 2018 this year. And he already had been nominated, elected as the Zanzibar presidential candidate for 2018. So the aspect of him being old is really something which is totally ridiculous, because he's mentally alert. And from a humanitarian point of view, people would think we are being cruel, but I think we're discharging our jobs professionally within the constitution of the country, because we cannot allow a situation where people do things with impunity and are not held accountable. Even presidents must be held accountable.
Temba Mliswa is the chair of Zimbabwe's Parliamentary Committee on Mines and Energy. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. The UN Human Rights Office is calling for the release of thousands of people in Libya who are being held in unlawful detention by armed groups and subjected to torture and other forms of abuse. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report finds almost anyone in that nation is liable to be picked up and arbitrarily detained in one of the many prisons run by armed groups, including those affiliated with the state government. It says thousands of men, women, and children across Libya are unlawfully deprived of their liberty and subjected to the most appalling abuses and violations, including torture and other inhumane treatment. UN human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says people are taken and unlawfully imprisoned based on their tribal or family links and perceived political persuasions.
Since renewed hostilities broke out in 2014, armed groups on all sides have rounded up suspected opponents, critics, activists, medical professionals, journalists, and politicians. Hostage taking for prisoner exchanges or ransom is also common.
The report, published with the UN support mission in Libya, examines the main human rights concern of people in detention between December 2015 and January 2018. The report finds some 6,500 people have been held in official state prisons. However, it says there are no available statistics on the thousands held in prisons run by armed groups. It says people detained in those places are most at risk of torture and other human rights violations or abuses. It says these people lack all protections because armed groups routinely deny them any contact with the outside world, causing a great deal of suffering to families members who do not know the fate of their loved ones. The UN Human Rights Office is calling for the release of all those arbitrarily detained. It urges the Libyan authorities to publicly condemn torture, ill-treatment, and summary executions of those unlawfully imprisoned. It adds, people guilty of crimes must be held accountable. Libya descended into chaos after the 2011 uprising, in which longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi was toppled and later killed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A new study in the Democratic Republic of Congo has found that even small doses of cheap deworming drugs can lead to significant health benefits for women farmers. Dr. Michael Capello, a co-author of the report and professor of public health at Yale University, tells Reiki Shryak why these new findings can lead to improved physical fitness in particularly vulnerable populations.
There were some very important questions that really haven't been answered. And some of this has to do with the effectiveness of the deworming medicine, and some of it has to do with the changing epidemiology of worm infections in many parts of Africa and also in many emerging economies. So what we have seen over the past couple decades is that overall, the intensity of these worm infections have been decreasing, which is a good thing, meaning while there still may be many members of a community that are infected with one or more intestinal worms, overall, the intensity of infection within each person has been gradually going down. And there are many potential reasons as to why that is. So the second question that I think this study sheds some light on is that even those women farmers who harbored relatively low intensity infections, so a relatively modest number of worms, even they benefited from this deworming treatment. And I think that's a very important finding.
Why choose small women farmers as the study group for this?
So I think there are a number of important reasons to study this particular population. One of them you alluded to, which is that they are in many communities, especially rural communities that suffer disproportionately from poverty. Women are often the engine of economic output and productivity, and they hold sort of an outsized responsibility for providing for their families on a day-to-day basis. And so this is not just an important population, it's also an incredibly vulnerable population.
When we talk about hookworm, which I think is what we're talking about, what are the prevalency rates in this area, or do you know, and how much of it really goes untreated or undiagnosed?
In most endemic parts of the world, and in particular in the rural parts of sub-Saharan Africa, the infrastructure is not in place to diagnose intestinal worm infections and then treat people. In terms of controlling worm infections in poor parts of the world, the approach really has been to periodically go into a community, identify the groups at highest risk, and those are typically school-aged children, and then distribute deworming medicines once or twice a year, depending on the expected or anticipated or estimated prevalence. The challenge with that approach is that the cost of diagnosing prior to treatment, treating only those who are infected, and then following up to ensure that that treatment was successful is frequently beyond both the financial as well as the human resource capacity of many local health departments. While this approach is recommended by the World Health Organization and has been embraced by many countries and their ministries of health, there's relatively little on the ground data to demonstrate the effectiveness of that approach.
That was Dr. Michael Capello, co-author of the report and professor of public health at Yale University. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Connecticut. And that is it for this Wednesday, April 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the life and legacy of Winnie Madikizela Mandela, the giant of the anti-apartheid movement who died last Monday. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.